Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Just Press Start at justpressstart.net. I am thrilled to have with me this evening Josh Sawyer from Obsidian, back on the program after a couple of years to discuss the upcoming Pillars of Eternity 2, Deadfire. Josh, thank you so much for coming on. Why don't you tell people a little bit about both the new game and the campaign and the Fig campaign?
God, great. Thanks for having me. So the new game is set a few years after the original Pillars of Eternity, and it's set in the same world as the first game, Eora. We've moved to a slightly less traditional setting for a fantasy role-playing game, an area that's inspired more by the South Pacific and Polynesian Islands rather than being so strictly Eurocentric. Although there are there are traces of the colonial cultures that are present in this archipelago. And the Deadfire is so named because it consists of hundreds of islands, volcanic islands, that are stretched over thousands of miles. It provides us a lot of opportunities to introduce new visuals, cool dynamic weather and foliage and things like that. And it's coming together really nicely. And then the Fig campaign is, we're in our second week now, I think, or
1 week.
We're just 1 week in, and it's going really well so far. We're very, very happy with how it's going and the amount of faith that our former backers and new players are showing in us. So that's very heartwarming.
You're being very modest. It's going tremendously well. I'm sure
it's
you
going
guys
very
are thrilled.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so, I think last week it launched,
right?
And in 23 hours it was funded, so 1.1 million, and then now we're 1 week in, sorry, and it just hit 2 million today.
That's just incredible. So, I mean, that's, now, I think we talked about this the last time with the first Pillars in your Kickstarter campaign. Does that give you more confidence, or does that make you feel more pressure the more you see people getting behind you?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I always feel pressure to make sure that we are making something that's really good for people. You know, in the early phases of the crowdfunding campaign, there's always a lot of excitement. People have a lot of questions. We try to answer their questions as best we can. Some of the answers we give them excite them. Some of the answers we give them make them angry. Well, excites them in a different way, makes them angry. So, you know, we're trying to be, as always, we're trying to be as transparent as possible about what we're doing and what we're trying to accomplish with the game. So I think I always feel pressure to, it's not so much to do what everyone expects, but to make sure that they understand where we're coming from and what we're trying to do. Because the last thing I want to have happen is for someone to back the game and then feel burned because we didn't really communicate well, or we didn't execute on the promises that we made, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to be as communicative as we can be about what we're doing, and so far the response has been really great.
So in creating a sequel, and again, you guys have been doing this for so long, you have so much experience, it might be a bit easier, even though this is Obsidian's first, you know, true sequel.
Yeah.
Is how do you decide, I guess, you want to do everything more, better, bigger, but also keeping what people loved about the first title in there. So how do you design that balance as you continue development?
Well, we try not to make one thing in terms of scope, in terms of the overall size of the game, is we're trying not to go crazy in terms of making it enormous. I do think that one of the big pressures in making a game like this is that a lot of people see Pillars of Eternity 1 as the equivalent of Baldur's Gate 1, and so they imagine that Pillars of Eternity 2 is going to be the equivalent of Baldur's Gate 2. And with that comes a certain number of expectations in terms of having, you know, dozens of companions and having a game that's 200 hours long. And we're trying to make very clear early on that we do want to have companions that are really in depth, much more in depth than Pillars 1. We want to have a world that is very big and a game that is very long and that gives players lots of freedom in how they explore it. But we're not trying to make something that is 200 hours long. We're not trying to make, you know, 20 companions. We're trying to be very clear about all that. So if they have expectations, again, I would rather, you know, have them understand, you know, I'd rather have them be let down in some areas early so that they're excited about the stuff that we're actually doing rather than stuff that they in their mind think that we're doing.
Right.
So yeah, in making a sequel, we really try to focus on things where we believe that either if there were severe shortcomings, we want to fix the severe shortcomings, and if there are small things that we think we can do to make the game significantly better, we want to do those. But overall, we want to focus on making a lot of new great content, because that's usually where our growing pains are, is how do we make a world this big with these many quests and these many dialogues, efficiently? And because Obsidian has never really had a chance to iterate on that, usually that's a question that we ask on every single game. Whereas on this game, we pretty much know what it takes to make those things, so we can be a little more efficient about it. That being said, we are trying to get greater reactivity out of our quests and our companions and things like that. So that slows down the process a little bit. But again, our overall focus is something that's about the size of Pillars of Eternity 1, with just like much higher level of quality and reactivity and all that good stuff.
So in creating the story for Deadfire, how much do you decide when, obviously at the beginning of every role player, you have to backtrack a little bit if it's a sequel to get people who, you know, who haven't been playing on board. But how do you decide just how do you decide how it's going to start? Do you know what I'm saying?
I decided it right away.
Okay.
So
Or maybe
yeah,
that's easy. Okay.
I said, I mean, I like a lot of times, I found that on games, a lot of times it works well to just start from the beginning, to really say like, what is the inciting event that propels everything forward? And on Fallout New Vegas, it was actually Chris Avellone who came up with the idea that you get shot in the head and dropped in a shallow grave in the middle of the desert. And that was really, you know, that was it. That was Chris's idea.
Right.
It was John Gonzalez, our creative lead, who fleshed out, and it was this guy named Benny who did it. And you were a courier and you were carrying a platinum chip and he took it from you and it's this and that and that. So for me, I said, I had an idea. I said, what if at the beginning of Pillars of Eternity 2, the god Aethys occupies the statue beneath your fortress, Cadnua, and tears his way out and destroys the castle and almost kills you. And some people thought that was a cooler idea than others. So it took some convincing. And also then we had to figure out like, okay, so then what happens after that point? Like, what is the actual conflict? Where does it go? How do you get entangled with, you know, various people and groups along the way? And that was the real process of figuring out the story as a whole thing.
Right. And so, and the other thing with sequels to role players is you have to find a way to start players kind of back at ground zero. They might be more powerful iterations of characters they've used before, but they're still, you know, the trope of not being anywhere near ready for the final thing that they're going to face. So again, how do you work that into the lore so it seems natural rather than kind of the eye rolling, "Oh, you were all robbed it in the inn and you lost all of your gear."
Well, this god is very hungry for souls, and he basically steals a huge amount of your soul from you.
Okay.
Souls are a big part of the Pillars of Eternity universe.
Right.
And I mean, if you see the trailer, like, I mean, he completely annihilates your entire castle. So that's gone, and all the stuff in it is gone. So you are really starting again in a very weakened state. When you begin the story, you are, you know, on the brink of death. And you're really trying to pull your way out of that. So that is our narrative conceit, is that Aethys, and the thing is, he's not just pulling out your soul energy, but as you can see in the trailer, he's actually pulling the souls out of lots of people all around him as he escapes. So you were lucky because you didn't die. A lot of people died in the process. So that's kind of our narrative, the hook for
Right.
and the explanation for why you've been weakened and you don't have all of your insane soulbound weapons anymore. How can
So
you have a soulbound weapon if you have no soul?
this is a very
Or
good point.
very, very weak soul.
So let's talk about you said you wanted to make the quests more interactive and the companions even more realistic. So let's talk about the AI involved, because I know you're a big proponent of that and you know, the idea of evolving conversations and things. So tell me a little bit about how you're exploring that territory.
Well, there are a few things that we're doing. One is that we made a commitment to flesh out the companions earlier in the development process, and do more regular checkups on how they are connecting into the plot to make sure that they feel much more tightly connected to the main story. But in terms of reactivity, we earlier rather than later, we try to find points of contention or agreement on common topics that are thematic within the game. Those can be issues of colonialism. They can be about the gods themselves. It can be about optimism. It can be about tradition and the importance of following tradition or obedience or loyalty. These are all things that these different companions care about. And in our dialogues, we will actually mark a lot of our lines as being pro or anti these things. And when they come up, we actually have a system where the companions recognize that you are taking a stand, or actually that other companions may be taking a stand on something that they like or dislike, and they will start to respond to it. Sometimes the response is actually a scripted response. In other cases, it's that they systemically start to take a negative view or a positive view of that character, and then later it culminates in something where they either blow up at the person or they form like a deeper connection with that character. So we do a lot of that with companions, and we also try to make sure that in conversations, when companions interject, that the NPC that you're talking to also interjects, which is something that a fair number of games have done, and we didn't really do it very well on Pillars. So we're trying to bring that back in Deadfire. So if you're talking to someone and one of your companions mouths off, the NPC that you're talking to notices that and might, get into a little tiff with the person. It might even escalate depending on what the situation is, if your companion is being a huge jackass. But it all goes towards this idea of making them feel more present and reactive in the story in a way that feels organic and sensible.
And actually having a gameplay consequence too, it sounds like, potentially.
Yeah, there are cases where companions might leave. Companions might really prefer to be with one person. They might not want to be in the party with another person. So, for example, you can recruit all the companions, but you might wind up in a situation where someone says, if that person's going with you, I'm not going with you. It's either me or it's them. You can also have situations where a companion leaves you and like goes to your opposition or things like that. So we try to make it seem, again, natural and organic and not something where suddenly they just flip out and become suicidal, like
Right.
they're going to attack all of you. But we do want to have like more consequences like that. And one of the things that I think is advantageous about doing it more or less systemically is that because you're building toward a break point, if it's something that's happening over time, the player shouldn't really be surprised by it. Like they should get a warning, like this person's getting really aggravated. Of course, there are still certain things where, a companion will, where it seems like very obvious where like, hey, this person is associated with this faction, you decided to murder that faction. Well, that companion is going to go from 0 to 60 immediately. So
Right.
that can happen as well.
So what are the other, you had talked earlier about the, you wanted to make some tweaks and you also wanted to make some almost wholesale changes to things that were done in the first pillar. So can you talk to me a little bit about that, some of the new enhanced gameplay that we might be able to expect?
Yeah, so there are a few things that we did. One of the most noteworthy in terms of character building is that we have a new multi-classing system that we've designed.
Okay.
And it's actually something that I think we launched an update about today so that people can see it in more detail. But it allows them to select an alternate class to level up separately from their main class, which gives them a lot of build possibilities. So you could build a character that's half wizard, half fighter, or, two-thirds barbarian, one-third cipher, or whatever sort of combination you want to make. And it's very, very flexible in terms of what it allows you to do. We also have subclasses now, which are very similar to kits in second edition D&D. And kits would be something like, like an assassin is sort of like a sub-specialization of rogue, or a Black Jacket Academy fighter is a sort of like a master of weapons in the fighter class. And these subclasses just allow you to get like a neat little trade-off at first level that affects how you play the game. And so those are two new things that we've added. We've also put a lot of focus on making combat easier to follow and clearer. One of the recurring complaints we saw on our forums and in threads and in reviews is that combat can sometimes become cluttered and difficult to follow. So there are a number of things that we did. Some of these things are more controversial than others. We made the visual effects render differently, and we changed a lot of them to make them go off more quickly. So that helps with readability quite a bit.
Okay.
We increased selection circle sizes and attack ranges for creatures, so they're spaced out a little bit more. And we also went to a oh, I'm sorry. We also slowed the rate of combat down. The default rate of combat is just a little bit slower, so that it's easier to sort of track what everyone is doing. And then finally, we moved from a 6-member party to a 5-member party, which really actually makes a huge difference in how much focus you can give to each individual character. One of the big changes between the Infinity Engine games and Pillars of Eternity is that in the Infinity Engine games, many of the classes were relatively passive. They didn't have many active abilities. A lot of their gameplay was purely positional based. We went to a more active system for Pillars of Eternity. So, for example, a fighter or a rogue has many more things to do, but as a consequence, it requires a lot more mental sort of upkeep on behalf of the player. So, we wanted to keep that level of interactivity with the individual characters, but the only way to do that and really have the combat pace the way that we felt would work well is to bring the party size down just a little bit.
So I guess how do you then, in continuing with that thread, for the players who become overwhelmed by that? I know you had different difficulty selections in the original game, but how do you reassure other players who are fascinated by the idea of the story but are terrified of the idea of micromanaging?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the changes that we've made will, I mean, they'll, I think they'll help everybody. They'll obviously help the people who are most frustrated. But additionally, we have one of the things that we didn't have at launch in Pillars of Eternity, but we added in one of our later patches, is something called story mode. Or actually, it's called story time. And story time makes things really, really, really easy, to the point where you kind of got to be trying to die. Or just not paying attention at all. So story time is really for those people who are having a difficult time getting hang of the combat. Beyond that, we always have easy and normal and hard, and then Path of the Damned, and then the optional super difficulty modes on top of that.
So, I mean, even at this stage of development, what are you the most pleased with so far? I mean, what are you, even if you haven't mentioned it yet, something that's like, oh man, you are not going to believe when you see X.
I think a lot of it actually shows in our trailers. The lighting in our game is much, much better. The levels really seem to be much more alive. So one of the big, when we started out saying, what are we going to do for Deadfire? What are our goals? One of the first goals that I put in was a living world. And part of that, there are a lot of parts that make up a living world, but to me, a big part of that was to make the levels feel more alive and dynamic. People loved the way that levels looked in Pillars 1, but a lot of people noted they feel very static. So we tried to find ways to make light come alive and play more of a role in the level. We added dynamic weather. We also added dynamic foliage, so trees that sway and bushes that move and react to the wind. We have an integrated wind system, so when wind blows across the scene, you'll see fires and smoke and trees all bend with it. Characters' cloaks will move with it, all that sort of stuff. So that element. And it's actually really nice because sometimes I just sit and like look at a screen, and it's really nice to just watch everything moving. We have things like cloud maps that roll across the scene. So it's an isometric game, but you'll see like a cloud kind of roll in and roll over the terrain and the house and then keep going. And it's stuff like that that really, really bumps up the visual fidelity and makes it look much more like a contemporary game and not a painting that you're walking around on. We've also really improved a ton of the animations. A lot of people really, they thought that the animations in Pillars could have been better. We only had one animator on the project for a very long time. A lot of people really liked the quality of the animations in Tyranny. Tyranny used a later version of Unity that we are now using. Tyranny also had a lot more animators on it. So we took a lot of those animators, and they've made a lot of really cool stuff. Our attack animations have all been redone. We have a lot more idles and fidgets and ambient behaviors in the world. Another thing that I haven't mentioned yet is NPC scheduling. So, sort of like the Ultima games, we have characters that have daily routines. So, people that'll get up, go to work, after work, go to the pub, go home, go to bed. And sometimes those are just ambient things that you notice. And other times, characters are on a schedule that ties into a quest. And based on when you kind of go to find that character, Where you encounter them may change how you go through the quest. So it will open a different opportunity for you that you wouldn't have had if you encountered them in another place. And our focus with all of that is always to design the quests such that the time of day is never an inconvenience. It's an opportunity to do something in a new way. So with that approach, I think that people are really going to, again, feel that the world is much more alive and that they have more cool ways to go through the quests.
So that's cool. So it's not going to, like you just said, it's not going to feel like, oh, okay, I guess I need to wait until midnight to do this the way I wanted. What can I do this way that might be just as interesting and
Exactly.
effective?
So,
Okay.
yeah. So one of the examples is that we have a quest where these thugs beat up this pirate captain, and they took a bunch of his money. And you can go and confront them, and you can learn like, oh yeah, they hang out in this alley by the this dance this magic show at night. And you can go there during the day, and they're not there. But there is a street urchin there, and if you talk to the street urchin, you can ask her like, here, where are these the guy with the wolf and these other scumbags? Like, where are they? And she'll go like, oh no, they only come here at night. During the day, they sleep it off in this flop house over on the other side of the city. So if you go over there during the day and come in, they're completely unprepared for you, and you can catch them off guard, and you basically get the upper hand that way. So in that case, again, it's something where you get an opportunity to do something in a way that you wouldn't normally have had.
But you're not being penalized if you did,
No.
if you do happen to get there at night.
Yeah, if you get there at night, they're there, and you can just confront them, and that's on one way that you can do it.
Right. And that's good. Now, are you worried about completionists or people who are bad at making decisions who are going to say, well, but maybe that way's better, like min-maxers who are going to try and find the one true path through that? How do you
No.
encourage them make a decision and you're okay?
Well, we really try to focus on all quests, no matter how you com well, I shouldn't say all quests, but when you complete a quest, you always wind up getting the same amount of experience.
Okay.
So we actually have a bunch of like little internal checks and balances where it says like, hey, at each stage of the quest, award this portion of XP. But if a player figures out a clever way to skip a step, or if they choose an optional path through, once they get to the end, it says, hey, how much XP have I given out for this quest? How much is left? Give the rest. So we want people to do quests the way that they want to do them. And part of that means that we set up our rewards such that it says, you know what? If you figured out a really smarty way to do this, that skip to the end, you still get the same reward. We always award you the same lump sum at the end.
Right.
So that, it really comes down to, and that what we want to create in the player's mind is the expectation that I just need to pick the way that I want to do it, and I'm going to get the reward at the end of it. And it's going to be satisfying because I chose the way that I did it.
And you could always go back later with a new party and try it a different way in a
Yeah.
different game. Exactly.
By the way that I prefer to deal with those thugs at night is they stand around by a bunch of gunpowder barrels. And I like to cast a fire spell at them, and then they burn for a few seconds and blow them all up. So that is a new thing that we added as well, which is pretty fun.
You're killing me. Now I have two different, very different ways to try this now.
Yeah.
So, again, I know you're extremely busy, so I want to try and keep this brief.
Sure.
Why don't I have obviously, I mentioned the Fig campaign, but if people want to help you out, they want to make this become a reality, even though it's already been funded, why don't you tell them where they can go, what they can do, how they can assist Obsidian in making this, or making Pillars 2 a reality?
You can go to fig.co, and we are one of the main campaigns that is featured on Fig for the remainder of the campaign, which is going through most of February. Also, another thing that you can do, because we understand that we have a lot of very generous backers who I'm very pleased have a lot of faith in us. But if you tell other people about it, if you tell people, hey, this game is coming out, it's going to be really cool, check it out. Telling other people and getting them interested in possibly backing, that helps a great deal because the way that these crowdfunding campaigns typically work is that we get the vast majority of our backers within the first 24 to 48 hours, and then it drops off tremendously. So any boost throughout the month of February is greatly appreciated.
And then hopefully a whoosh at the end, even though you'd like to keep a more steady stream of people coming through the entire
Yeah,
month.
we always love those last minute pushes, and we were very lucky that we received about a third of our funds for Pillars of Eternity in the last day, which was really fantastic. But we never take anything for granted when it comes to this stuff. We were all very surprised when Pillars of Eternity funded. We were pretty confident that Deadfire was going to fund. I don't know how many of us actually believed it was going to fund in 23 hours, which is actually faster than the first campaign. But yeah, like we know that we're relying on people having faith in us and the generosity to, support us. So we always appreciate that.
Well, when you release quality products, the fans will definitely support you. So
Hopefully that continues in the future.
I hope definitely. Well, Josh, thank you so much for your time tonight. Like I said, I know you're incredibly busy. You're still, early in the campaign here, and early first quarter of 2018 is the presumed release. So I know there's plenty of time. I'd love to have you back on as production continues and maybe see how the
Sure.
game has evolved.
Definitely.
And thank you so very much for your time tonight. And I look forward to talking to you again. And best of luck.
Thanks, Jeff. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.